This is a great conversation. I had a patient who reached out to me and she said, can you write me a prescription so I can go run outside? And I'm like, well, legally, I don't think I could do that. I think I could lose my medical license.
That's Jason Valadao. He's not your average doctor. In fact, Jason works with some of the most elite athletes and business leaders on planet Earth. Jason takes a holistic approach to wellness and understands the struggles each person faces when it comes to creating a truly fulfilling life. Jason is living proof that anyone can cultivate their own happiness no matter the circumstances. You could say he's overcome many challenges himself as a father, cancer survivor, leader in the U.S. Navy, teacher and mentor at various universities, and doctor of family and sports medicine. His secret to fulfillment doesn't stem from endless to-do lists, but rather from his keen ability to help others overcome their struggles to achieve their aspirations. Jason's now dedicated to helping people take charge of their lives, reset their priorities, and live the best versions of themselves, despite any challenges that come their way.
Here's what I told her. The police aren't making you stay in your house right now. Go on a run by yourself. Get in your backyard. Get out there and get fresh air, because if you just stay trapped all the time, you don't even go on your doorstep, that's not going to work. What we want to do is get people away from large crowds.
This is the Game Changing Attorney Podcast. I'm Michael Mogul, founder and CEO of Crisp Video, the nation's number one law firm growth company. I've built my business through practice, not theory. Crisp started with just $500 to my name and has grown to over eight figures in revenue over the last few years, earning a spot on the Inc. 500 list of the fastest growing private companies in America. Our approach has been to take everything we've learned about generating massive growth within our own organization and help the country's most ambitious and committed law firm owners do the same for theirs. In each episode of this podcast, I sit down with innovative market leaders from the legal industry and beyond to learn from those who thrive in the face of adversity, challenge the status quo, and define what it means to be a true game changer. For today's episode, I sat down with Jason to sort fact from fiction regarding COVID-19, the coronavirus. From the effects of social distancing on our physical and mental health to the strategies we as business leaders can employ to mitigate some of the more damaging consequences.
If there was one key, I'd say, for a business leader, communicate with your people daily, or at least maybe a couple times a week. Maybe you don't have to talk to them every day, but tell them, hey, this is what I'm looking at doing to kind of keep you going and to build that faith.
That's coming up on the Game Changing Attorney Podcast. The coronavirus outbreak has plunged the U.S. and the world into a rapidly evolving crisis. Many businesses have been caught off guard and are having to think quickly and act even faster to stay afloat. In this era of fake news and widespread misinformation, I turned to Jason, a medical doctor with boots on the ground, to give us his insights into this unique moment in history.
We are dealing with something we haven't seen in our lifetime. So you and I, guys in our 30s, 40s, this hasn't been in our lifetime, but it also hasn't been in a lot of our parents' lifetimes or even some of those grandparents, not something of this nature. And yes, pandemics have happened before. We've had World War I, World War II, Vietnam War, those kind of things. But where we've had something where you can't see it, we have a virus that's actually getting transmitted both by people who traveled and now by what we're calling local community spread, this is something that we weren't ready for. There's uncharted waters, both for the government, for the military, for civilians like yourself who are running companies and having to make decisions now where it's like, wow, I've got to tell these people to stay at home. We've got kids who aren't going to school. I think the last statistic I saw a couple of days ago is over 50 million kids in the U.S. are going to home and doing homeschool now with a lot of them with parents who work and have to work two or three jobs just to make a living. And now they're at home trying to coordinate their child getting their education. We have more than a pandemic in terms of a disease. We have a complete societal shift. And I think that's what we're going to be dealing with for a while.
As a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, we find ourselves in economically volatile times. Teams are working from home. Companies are struggling to bring in new revenue. The stock market is down. And business leaders are trying to assess the gravity of the situation. While at the same time, they're also trying to figure out what contingency plans do we need to put in place and, more importantly, into action.
The problem now is that it is spreading quickly and we haven't even gotten where that curve. And if you look at these charts that are posted online, we're kind of looking for this inflection point where the disease starts to go back down. We're not even at the peak yet. And that's the biggest problem for us is you've got major cities, San Francisco, the state of Washington, New York. I mean, these places have been hit hard. And the rest of us, if we're not living in those cities, haven't truly been hit yet. That's kind of how I've been looking at it. But you think about what's going on domestically. So we're shutting restaurants down. We're shutting down big companies that have lots of employees. I mean, even to give you perspective, and this isn't classified, is even the military goes to a point of going to essential personnel only. So where I might have 20 medics on a given day in my office, there's now me, a nurse, and maybe four medics, and everyone else is staying away. Now, where it gets really serious and where, when I talk to people who are very frantic, they've got a lot of fear, there's a lot of anxiety. They're like, but my hometown looks normal. There can't be spread here. The issue is we don't know what it looks like inside those hospitals. So my goal as a primary care provider, I'm trying to keep people away from the emergency room, away from the urgent care, unless they absolutely have to go. So doing these primary screenings is essential. Looking for things like fever, where they do have that cough, shortness of breath, and then really still, we're still focused on where have they traveled in these last 14 days? Have they been overseas? Most people haven't traveled internationally, but did they travel to like a high-risk city like New York or San Francisco or Los Angeles now? And so putting all that in perspective is why we have so many shifts in the economy almost daily now.
So what about, I guess, when you look at people that are the highest risk? I mean, we were hearing things about, let's say, like the elderly, people that may not be very healthy to begin with. You have people that, you know, smokers, things like that, because there's obviously the pulmonary component of this. But I guess where I'm wondering is, who are the highest risk? And then also, let's say, because we imagine with compounding that there's going to be a large percentage of the country, pretty much all countries, that are going to get it in some form at some point. At what point do you need to go to the hospital? At what point are you considered fairly low risk, even if you do get it?
Everybody was saying 2-3 weeks ago, if you're under 65, don't worry, right? Like you look at Italy right now, which is getting decimated, where I have a ton of my own family and a lot of people that I know, they're getting decimated there. I mean, 600, 800 people died a day over the last several days. So it was at the elderly initially. But now, if you look at the current data from the CDC in the last 72 hours in the U.S., many more people between the ages of 30 and 50, even 55, are getting sent to the ICU. The problem is we don't have enough ICU beds in the United States. We are running out. Speaking from my own military, the Navy right now has two ships, the USS Comfort, USS Mercy. One is getting sent to New York, to Manhattan Harbor. The other is likely going to Los Angeles and San Francisco. Each of those ships has 800 beds. And what people don't know, those ships aren't going there to do COVID-19 patients. They're actually going there to offload a bunch of the other patients that are non-COVID-19 so we can open up beds in the hospitals for those patients. So the elderly are one. Yes, they're more frail. People typically that are over 65, 70, they don't work out as much. They don't eat as healthy as maybe some of the younger generations these days. But when you're a smoker, you've got a prior history of lung disease, people with things like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, tuberculosis, anything that involves the lungs, asthmatics, people with seasonal allergies are coming out and they're wondering if they should get screened. And the issue with that is so many of us have seasonal allergies for different things, whether it's the pollen, the cedarwood, if you're in Texas, all over the place. And so now we've got to do a good thing as healthcare providers. Hey, should I let this patient go to the ER or should I try to make sure I can take care of them at home first? Because your risk of going to get tested in an ER and urgent care is pretty high when you've got all these sick people there.
At what point does somebody know they need to go to the hospital? Because I also would imagine that there's the increased demand, as you mentioned, on the healthcare system right now, the fact there's not as many beds, and also the fact that the people you're around when you're in the hospital, like they could be spreading it and exacerbating it too.
And it's getting pretty bad with healthcare workers themselves. I mean, never in the last 50, 60 years have you heard of doctors and nurses saying, I'm scared right now. You know, you get all this medical training, you go through residency, you go through fellowship, you see all these sick patients, but never have they been talking about, we have to ration our ventilators now and put two patients on a ventilator at once, or all these novel drugs coming out, which you're going to hear about, like chloroquine or Plaquenil, these anti-malarial drugs that everybody wants to get a hold of now, yet we don't have the money, the resources to do that. And then we're going to run out of having it for the patients who actually need it. I think we have to look at what the specific disease criteria are. So the fever, not knowing why you got a fever, and this dry, persistent cough that actually produces shortness of breath. So you and me sitting here right now doing nothing, relaxed, and all of a sudden we're like short of breath, where we're dyspneic is what is a better way to say it medically, or dyspnea. Whereas, hey, I'm in good shape. I work out all the time. And right now I can't catch my breath and I'm not doing anything. And the dry cough means you're not hacking up any mucus. It's really, really, there's nothing there. And so it's this pneumonia type picture with a fever. And typically you've had contact with someone or you did travel. They're still putting that on the CDC list, But that's kind of getting pushed away now. Now we're looking more at these actual fever, cough, shortness of breath to try and break it apart from flu. Because with general influenza, you typically do get the fevers, the headaches, but you also get the body aches. And not as many people are reporting these body aches in the first 5 to 6 days. So that's what's kind of changing the game.
So something I'm wondering, and I'm not trying to like minimize this, marginalize this in any way, because I'm also seeking to understand, is how much of this in this specific case, given that we're in 2020, social media is active, the media is very active, how much of this has been actually made worse by just by sheer panic?
I think this has gone up tremendously. And I think part of what I talk to patients about, especially with the platform with SteadyMD, when I'm talking to patients who have pre-existing anxiety or depression, is that these kind of situations just make it worse, right? So you hear the news. I mean, I try to tell people as a physician, hey, if you don't have to be on the news, stay away from it. Get your updates. If you want to check something, go to cdc.gov and check the CDC website. But going on CNN, MSNBC, CBS, all those news stations, they're going to present a lot of good data, but there's also going to be some marketing that goes on there, because how do we drive society? We drive it with fear a lot and panic. And I just think that there's so much of that. The hysteria got blown out of proportion back in February. And now the issue is, how do we divide the hysteria from what's really happening? And when you see people dying and you see people losing their jobs and students not going to school, I mean, in California, where my goddaughter is, they've just proposed there's no school at a minimum until May 1st. So that's 5 more weeks. You talk about, I mean, there's so much pandemonium going on that it is hard for someone who isn't involved in the medical, not involved medically or not involved with healthcare to know, what should I be worried about? And so I think you and I today, it's a perfect time to be like, hey, these are some things to really consider. And these are things you might want to just take a breath on, go for a walk, kind of get away. And we can talk more about that stuff as we go.
Yeah, I mean, because the other thing is also, I guess, putting it in perspective in the sense that we have, you know, several hundred million people in America, and there's all sorts of things that are happening. I mean, people are dying a lot of heart disease, of auto accidents, of all these different things. Now, again, I have to be very careful when we say these things, because we're not trying to marginalize the fact that, yes, people are dying. But let's say you're a healthy individual, you're under 50 years old, you get coronavirus. How long, like approximately, until you just get better on your own?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So right now, from what we're seeing in the data, people who actually get tested for it, that's the other big issue, right? We didn't do a lot of testing. We didn't do what South Korea did, where they got hundreds of thousands of tests right away. But they're working on new tests every day, even this 45-minute test that might be available by the end of the week. So typically what we're seeing is anywhere from 5, 6, 10 days with symptoms. You know, there's some people that are reporting they only had symptoms for about 3 days. But with our CDC guideline, we're quarantining people for 14 days. That also confounds the variable of, hey, when did that person get better? Because they're quarantined at home or they're quarantined on a cruise ship. And so I don't know, did they get better at day 3? Did they get better at day 10? And we won't know a lot more of that, probably for another week or two, until more people who've had cases of it come forward and start sharing their story.
There's been talks about like a vaccine and being able to expedite that process. Usually I know that takes quite a long time to just get cleared, but in this case, it seems like it could get expedited. But even so, how much of an impact would that even make today?
So I think it's not going to make an impact for 18 months or longer right now. I mean, that's typically what it takes a vaccine to come to market, anywhere from a year to 18 months. I mean, don't quote me on that, because there are different places, different labs. I'm not an epidemiologist, but from what we've seen in the past. So the issue is, we are testing. I know in Washington State, there's a couple people with no disease that are already getting the vaccine. So they're testing it out. But you've got to remember, several different labs and companies are going to try to create this vaccine as well. Now, what I am hearing, though, from the CDC is that this is a disease that may come in waves. So we may be looking pretty good a month or two from now, but then what happens next fall? And what's happening in China already? They thought they contained it in Wuhan. And now as of yesterday, they're saying, hey, we're starting to see cases spike back up because we've relaxed our containment efforts. So I even think to myself, is this something that all of us are going to have to get and at least pass through our system so that we can just get rid of it? And are we building the right antibody response? And that's really challenging, because it's really the young folks, the kids, the adolescents, the young adults that are kind of spreading it more than anyone else, because they're the ones that are out and about. There's still daycares open. There's still some schools that are open. There are still some gyms that are open, although all those kind of places are starting to close more and more. So I think a vaccine is probably going to really help us to give the optimism button here, but it's not going to be ready in the next 2 to 3 months.
It seems that there are no solid answers when it comes to predicting just how long we'll be dealing with this. Small businesses across the nation are getting hit particularly hard. Your local restaurants, movie theaters, daycares, gyms, and the consequences ripple throughout the economy. I wanted to get Jason's take on what the next few weeks are going to look like and whether the worst is yet to come.
I really think that the Surgeon General might have this one right in terms of, hey, the next couple of weeks, the last week of March, first week of April, probably going to see things get pretty tough. And not to put fear in people, but just, hey, we've got to do our due diligence. If the chain of command is saying, hey, everybody stay home, shelter in place, this is really serious. We're not trying to keep you from going out. And you know, the economy is going to rebound. The truth is, it's America, right? People come here like my parents did, like your parents did, like you did, immigrants that came to the U.S. and to start a new life and to provide better for us as children. This is going to happen. We're going to get there. But the one thing it's doing, it's unifying us in many different ways. You know, but it'd be awesome if we could just open everything up back in 7 to 10 days. But I don't know if it's going to work that fast. But I think some of our places are not going to see a lot of normalcy for another month or two. Because I look at Italy and Spain and the UK now. I mean, they're struggling and we're kind of mirroring that. And we have so many more people. And so if we get people to stay where they are, if they can work from home and they can work out at home, go to the store once a week. I mean, you don't have to be trapped. You know, I had a patient. This is a great conversation. I had a patient who reached out to me and she said, can you write me a prescription so I can go run outside? And I'm like, well, legally, I don't think I could do that. I think I could lose my medical license. Here's what I told her. The police aren't making you stay in your house right now. That's not what the government is doing. Go on a run by yourself. Get in your backyard. Get out there and get fresh air. Because if you just stay trapped all the time, you don't even go on your doorstep, that's not going to work. What we want to do is get people away from large crowds. And that, I think we can all do that if we do our diligence.
So if we had to, like, let's say, rewind the clock and knowing what we know now and like the things we're continuing to learn, how could we have approached it differently?
So on January 22nd, thereabouts, I think it was 22nd or 23rd, I was doing a WhatsApp conversation with my really good friend, another prior aviator from the Navy like me, turned doctor, and he's in Italy right now, right? So he was already getting some of the intel that the stuff in China wasn't looking good. Had another buddy in the military that was like, dude, this isn't looking right. So he reached out to me and said, hey, man, this next month, Italy's going to get hit, and then the U.S., and this was January 22nd. So that's over 2 months ago today, and we both said, you know, one thing, and I wrote this down. I said, we probably need to start shutting off international travel like within the next week. And if I had to go back and do that, and obviously I'm not the president, I'm not the chief of naval operations, all the big wigs, but I think looking back now, if we would have done that and curtailed that around the 1st of February, we might have really prevented a lot of what happened in New York. I mean, we all know New York is an epicenter of world travelers and international work. And I think that would have helped. San Francisco, same thing. These big major cities that are big airplane hubs and also just international places where you've got people from all over the world. And I think to reiterate, it's no one person's fault or one country's fault that this happened. It's what were the measures in place. And we honestly were not ready. The government, the military was not ready for this type of war. I mean, we're still doing Afghanistan, Iraq. I mean, we're in military-wise and we're looking at other things. But I mean, this is a humanitarian crisis that's at a whole new level because so many people are affected.
It's tempting to draw comparisons with the last recession. But the reality is that the coronavirus hit with very little warning, and it's having a much greater impact and effect than anyone could have ever imagined. Many people are being laid off, consumers aren't spending, and there's very little new money coming into most organizations. In fact, businesses can't continue to operate in the way that they used to. But what leaders can do at this time is lead with an open hand, serve their communities in new ways, and step up to lead their teams with clarity and confidence.
You have to start talking to all your employees and reassuring them that, hey, look, we're going to get through this. Just like the forefathers built the United States, 1776, with the Declaration of Independence, we're going to get through this adversity. The problem is a lot of people have no idea what real adversity is in their lives. And that's where we get so caught up. We think life is hard because, oh, we didn't go to the best college. We don't have the best car. We never got to buy the best house. But they don't really know. A lot of business people do, though. They know what it took to start that company from the ground up, to start with one employee, to grow it to two employees, to finally get the marketing down where they could actually go out there and sell their business. And I think as a leader of a company, and I love the transparency because of the military and what I get to be a part of with the whole leadership role, we do have to almost look at the military model and how you take care of your people. That you can't go into this anymore thinking that you're just going to stand at the top of the hill by yourself and your people can't come with you. You've got to get your people that are part of your organization to believe that, hey, this might take a week or two. We're going to do everything we can as the CEO, the president, to take care of these people, whether we've got to find a way to pay them some of their money, their wages. Because as you know, Michael, a lot of people are sitting at home right now without a paycheck. The unemployment rate has gone way up in the last couple of weeks. People are scared. People have actually lost their jobs because some of these companies fold. small businesses, friends of mine who are hairstylists, they're working in restaurants. They may not have a job when they go back. And that perspective. So I think communication, if there was one key I'd say for a business leader, communicate with your people daily, or at least maybe a couple times a week. Maybe you don't have to talk to them every day, but tell them, hey, this is what I'm looking at doing to kind of keep you going and to build that faith.
I agree 100%. And I'll say we've been putting out a lot of content in recent days and probably in recent weeks. And much of the stuff that we've been speaking on, I've been getting a lot of heat from this because understandably, yes, this is a difficult time. But the messaging we've been putting out is that this is an opportunity for leaders to do their job, right? Like this is like your call to greatness. This is, hey, man, like I know you were sitting here and you're kind of waiting on a moment to actually lead, but this is it, right? This is the time to step up. And what I sense around the country, because I do believe that our audience and the people we're speaking to are large, you know, business owners and leaders. So that's where the focus is. But I will say that if they're looking for someone else to solve this problem, if they're looking for the president to solve the problem, the government to solve the problem, someone to pay the people, like I believe that conversation needs to happen inward. And we need to get creative and strategic and figure out how do we support our teams? How do we not put the people that have been most loyal to us over these years in the unemployment line? You know, because you were right. Many people don't know adversity. What I find that there's everybody wants to lead until it's time to lower your quality of life, right?
And this is a great example of everybody having to change their life, right? I mean, everybody who is used to traveling once a week on an airplane or taking a vacation and all that stuff has stopped. And literally the world came to a standstill. I mean, the stock market itself had to shut down for that day. I mean, there's so much going on, but you said it best. And I love how you said that. This is the opportunity. If you wanted to be a leader of a company or a leader of people, then you want these moments to happen. Maybe not this drastically, because now everybody's just losing their minds, but this is where we can get creative as leaders. Hey, maybe I run this type of company that manufactures a certain type of product, and now I've got people at home. Maybe be creative and say, hey, you know what? You've never gotten to be creative in this way at home. I want you to start sketching some different outlines of what you think we could do and start to value your employees for other things they might be good at. You know, we hire people in companies sometimes because this is the one thing they're good at, but maybe they're hiding something else inside and you can inspire them. I mean, this is all about not really motivation right now. This is inspiration. It's time to breathe into these people that are at home that aren't as fortunate as you and I, where we still have jobs and we've got people we have to lead daily. We've got to start breathing some hope in more than we ever have before.
Yeah, we were having a conversation today. We were speaking with some clients and the message we were sharing is remember the world you want to come back to when this is over. And that's important to be mindful because as business owners, if we destroy one another, which means that we cut our team members, we cut our vendors, we cut our partners, and everybody's doing that to everybody else rather than trying to figure out creative solutions to be able to persist, what's going to be left, right? So I think it's taking that longer term outlook. But that being said, I'm also having conversations with business owners that say now that they've gone remote, they weren't previously remote, but their entire team, organizations of over 100 people that have gone remote have now ironically gotten closer together because they're doing more stand-ups, they're on Zoom all the time, they're collaborating, like they put new technology in place that they're like, wow, we're going to keep some of this stuff even after the coronavirus.
Well, you know, it's pretty funny because the military really wasn't doing telemedicine before is a great example. I was doing it on the side. That's how I met you. And our telemedicine with SteadyMD has gone crazy the last 3 weeks because now people are like, I need a doctor. I'm sitting at home. And you know, one story that I want to share that was, this will really speak to a leader's heart, I think. So yesterday I had a new patient. He's a truck driver. He tried to go to his primary care doctor 10, 12 days ago to get a refill of his blood pressure medications. The guy needs those to survive. His kidneys are going to shut down. His doctor said, I'm not seeing my primary care patients anymore because of COVID-19 right now. I can't see you and I can't put a refill in for you. So the guy's like, what am I supposed to do? And he's driving trucks around the country. So he found SteadyMD and then I met him and got him his refill, you know, and trying to get that going. So, but the creativity thing is so awesome. People are actually getting a lot more work done a little, even from home. Cause it's like, okay, I'm going to work for 2 or 3 hours, get all the work done. So companies can really be creative now more than ever. And there's so many different ways to do this.
So a lot of this starts, I've always felt that like you can't pour from an empty cup. And before you can lead anybody else, you've got to really lead yourself. What are some of the things you feel that leaders can do right now, especially to operate in peak state?
You've got to look at your priorities. You've got to look at your own health, your family's health, right? If you're a leader and you're not eating right and you're not exercising, you can be so creative in your house to exercise. I had a patient the other day who was telling me they live in a 6-story apartment in Chicago and they can't get outside. They're going up and down the stairs in the ladder well. You know, they're doing push-ups, jumping jacks. If they can afford it, some people have exercise bikes, elliptical machines, doing sit-ups on the ground, doing planks, all kinds of stuff. But you've got to carve out that 20 to 30 minutes a day. And then it goes beyond that. Hey, how about meditation? 5 to 10 minutes, right? Close your eyes, sit somewhere by yourself, listen to yourself breathe, and think about what it's like to be in your position. There's people that don't even have a home to go to right now. You know, there's people that are going to lose their homes. They're going to foreclose on their homes. They're going to lose their cars. There's so many things that you can do. So I think number one, you've got to take care of yourself, right? If you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of anybody. Whether that's because I'm a father and my two daughters at home, my wife, you know, think about ways to mitigate that. Keep your strength up. Eat healthy. You know, this might be a great time to say, hey, even though you're stressed out, if you're someone who likes to have a couple drinks every night, you might want to say, you know what? I don't need that because I need to sleep well tonight. And we all know that if you drink too much at night just to take off the edge, you may not get as good a sleep. You know, just doing, getting up from your chair every couple hours if you're working from home and doing a good little 5-minute stretch routine. But I think number two is you really have to think about what matters now. And this is a great opportunity for families that are stuck at home to actually have some time together, to not go to a restaurant where every person in the family is on a cell phone. Sit around the family, play a board game that maybe you've never played before. Teach your child a card game that you learned when you were 10 years old. And start to think about those things that really mattered, because we've lost track about a lot of that stuff, you know, and we're on Facebook all the time and we're on the internet. And I think it'd be great if this is just an opportunity to grow.
I agree. Now you mentioned, and I've even realized this, so I don't know that people realize how stressed out they are right now. So like I use one of those Whoop trackers, and my strain over the last couple of weeks, and I think Whoop even put out a study the other day where they looked across the board with like Whoop users, and they're like, strain's at an all-time high. And it's not just because we're all exercising like crazy, but it's actually because everyone's stressed the hell out.
We're internalizing so much of this. Speaking from a medical standpoint, we are taking this in. It's gnawing at our stomachs because all of us are literally a little bit scared. Whether we have fear or not, we're all saying like, when is this going to correct itself? When can I take my family out again? When can I get outside and have my kids go back to school? When am I going to be able to go back to my office and unlock the doors so everybody can come back to work? My hope is that when those days happen, whether it's in 2 weeks, 4 weeks, or 2 months, that that's going to put a new light on companies, that companies are going to start to value the people within the organizations a lot better. They're going to look at that downtime and they're going to say, hey, I really want you to take your 7 days of vacation. I want you to go home. Don't worry about checking the computer. Turn off your cell phone and spend that time with your family or doing things that you love if you're someone who's single and you don't have a family.
Something that took me years to really get a hold of and start approaching proactively and taking seriously, quite frankly, was sleep. And it's a common problem that I hear with leaders in all industry from all walks of life. You know, sleep is one of the first things we're willing to give up, you know, when it comes to growing our organization, but doing so can have some serious health ramifications and ultimately take us off our game.
I mean, if you really look at it, it's pretty crazy. It's startling and it scares me sometimes because I'm a guy that doesn't drink, full disclosure, don't smoke, don't drink, none of that stuff. I eat really healthy. I work out a couple times a day, but it's detriment, right? So I still don't want to give up my workouts, but I got 3 hours of sleep last night. So number one, that's not good because that causes some muscle wasting. Number two, there are plenty of medical studies proven that someone who doesn't get, you know, gets only four or five hours of sleep or even less, that's comparable drinking and getting a driving under the influence, that your chance of reaction time and getting in a car accident and potentially killing someone else goes up. I mean, that's how bad this is. We don't focus as well. We don't get as much work done. It can lead to things like thyroid problems. It can lead to diabetes. I mean, you could be the healthiest person there is. You work out, you do CrossFit 6 days a week. You eat perfectly, whether it's keto, paleo, vegan, and yet you're not sleeping the amount that you need. Your body's breaking down. Your adrenal glands, the fight or flight mode, where your cortisol and your adrenaline are getting released, those are all going to shut down.
The dangerous physiological effects of poor sleep speak for themselves. So what do we need to do to practice good sleep hygiene? We all probably know the answer, although we might not want to hear it.
One thing I tell all my patients, don't take your cell phone into the bedroom. You know, just turn it off at night, leave it in the kitchen. If you can turn it off, if it's really important, they're going to know how to get a hold of you. That's one of those things. And I feel like we've got to take sleep hygiene to a new level. You know, try not eating too much before bedtime because sometimes that causes an upset stomach. If you're going to exercise, try to do it a couple hours before bed if you're a nighttime exerciser, because all of those things put off a lot of hormones. And there are some supplements on the market. Melatonin is really safe. Magnesium can be good for sleep because it helps people calm down. Chamomile tea, lavender tea. There's also the whole medication side. And I would be very weary of putting people on prescribed medications for sleep. They're all controlled substances and they all have massive side effects if you're not careful.
So something I found, and perhaps this isn't even an opportunity for many people that are stuck at home right now, is generally been that what gets measured gets improved. And I didn't really start taking sleep seriously until I started tracking my sleep and realizing, okay, this is bad, right? Like I thought I was getting a lot better sleep than I actually was. And then I was actually saying, okay, a deep sleep wasn't great. REM sleep wasn't great. What are your recommendations on ways that people could just start tracking some of this stuff? And look, we're not sponsored by any brand or fitness tracker. So you could just list off the ones that you found that just do a good enough job.
There's so many out there. I would say right now, if I had to pick one where I'd put my money to try it, it would be the Whoop, just because I'm seeing the way the data looks. And it's hard because it's hard to buy into all these things because you just don't know if they're giving you the most accurate data. But if you can track it, you're right. If you can see something, it's like when we talk about losing weight or getting on a good exercise regimen for 21 days in a row. If you write it down in your journal or you do a diary, you have some way to look at it, it makes you more motivated to do it. And so when you can track your sleep, hey, you're like, hey, last night's not good. What did I do differently? Oh, I was up and I had the TV on until 5 minutes before I went to bed. Or I was talking on my cell phone and getting all those, whether you want to believe it or not, but all the RF transmission that comes from cell phones and satellites. I mean, there's a lot of power in stimulating our brains. So, you know, right now I'm so excited talking to you today. It would not be good to try and go to sleep in the next 5 minutes. There's just too much energy.
There's a growing conversation around stress and mental health, both in light of current events and even looking ahead to the future. People are losing their incomes, businesses are worried about cash flow, and honestly, we're all unsure what the future holds. In this difficult situation, it's key to manage a positive mindset for your business, your team, your family, and most importantly, your own health. I asked Jason to give me a rundown of the most important things we should be doing to cultivate the right mindset and keep ourselves in a healthy and balanced place.
So let's say you are stuck at home, like most of America right now. You know what? Get your sleep, turn everything off. If you are working from home, you can still mitigate. You know, you can talk to your boss. You can talk to the rest of the, you know, your team. Be like, hey guys, let's give everybody 30 minutes in the morning where they've got their own time. And what I mean by that is get up maybe 5-10 minutes early, do a good 20-30 minutes of exercise in your pajamas. It doesn't matter. Drink a glass of water, get the day started and do some mindfulness. Sit down for 5 minutes, do some breathing. Think about how you want the day to look and think about what you want your contribution to be, whether that's with your family or your company. Think about, hey, by the end of today, when 5 o'clock comes or 7 o'clock comes, I want to have accomplished this, and make some small goals throughout the day, right? Because it is hard when you're stuck at home and you can't go anywhere. It's hard to measure that. People have a hard time quantifying because people, when you go to work, you're like, hey, I'm going to get off work. I can go have a nice dinner. I can go to the gym after. And now you can't do that. So I put my mindset, when I get up in the morning, I like to give myself that buffer 30 minutes to an hour where it's just me. The kids are still asleep. My wife is asleep. I got my stuff ready the night before. And I can think about, okay, this is what I want the day to look like. I journal for 10 minutes, you know, do some writing about how yesterday went. But I think you've got to keep perspective. If we lose hope, because there's a lot of people, like we talked about, they're sitting at home going, there's no end in sight. It's like this impending doom that is only going to get worse. And I've used that a little bit today that, hey, things are going to look pretty grim for the next week to 2 weeks, but we got to look over the horizon. We've got to think about, hey, you know what? Yeah, there's going to be a lot more people who get sick, but if I can do my job to stay healthy, I'm one less person showing up at an ER. I'm one less person going to the hospital. And I think you've got to get that mindset where you know that you believe in yourself that you can contribute. Because that's how we succeed in life. When people know they can contribute, that's when true leadership happens.
Agreed. So Jason, then to close this out, obviously we feature game changers on the podcast. You're undoubtedly a game changer, which is why I've always enjoyed our conversations from the work that you do in the military to the work with athletes and corporate athletes and really anyone. I mean, it's just taking a very unique approach and a proactive approach. But what does being a game changer mean to you?
I think being a game changer is when you can look at yourself in the mirror and know that exactly that what you're doing is actually making a difference to all those around you. My dad used to always say, you've got to give more to society than you take. And I think right now there's never been a bigger time in my lifetime where we can start to try and contribute more. Because what I see happening in the next several months when this thing all clears, this is where we're going to have tremendous growth, right? All these creative artists that are at home, you know, creating their new music and creating programs on computers and people that are at home, just being creative. And what's going to happen when the market starts to get flooded with more and more people that are now going to use their creative voice and go, they finally believe in themselves. So a game changer, I feel like what you and I are doing is we're inspiring hope in other people. And there's so many ways. But for me, that's how I contribute. I'm a physician by day, but I'm also in the military as an officer. I get a chance to mentor people. I get a chance to take care of patients, both civilian and military. And for me, if I can help people see, get their health on track, help them with their fitness, their exercise, that's kind of how I feel like my role as a game changer happens.
I want to give a huge thanks to Dr. Jason Valadao for sharing his experience with us. You know, what particularly resonated with me was when Jason mentioned that we have more than a pandemic in terms of a disease. In fact, we have a complete societal shift, and yet, out of all this, he believes that we're going to respond positively, that communities will become more collaborative, that teams and leaders are going to be able to step up in unique ways, and that's certainly a message that I can get behind. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd really appreciate it if you could share the podcast with at least one other ambitious law firm owner who you believe would benefit. And you know what? Maybe more than one. For more information on our interview with Dr. Jason Valadao, see the show notes for this episode in your podcast app or visit gamechangingattorney.com. And join us next time when we'll be joined by the worldwide best-selling author of The Miracle Morning, Hal Elrod. We'll talk about the daily habits of the most successful leaders on the planet and the actionable steps you can take to transform every area of your life.
Most people blame things outside of themselves as to why they don't feel good. Of course I'm upset. Look at what's going on in the world. Of course I'm sad. Look at what I lost. Of course I'm angry. Look at what he or she did. No. You have to take responsibility for your inner world.
That's next time on the Game Changing Attorney Podcast.